Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Saturday, Sunday, June 29th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the weekend special titled A Rising Tide. Downtown Urbana, abuzz with new businesses. By Jana Wiersema, Urbana. Chris and Ann Lukeman have been part of Urbana's downtown scene for 10 years as the owners of CU Adventures in Time and Space. Their escape room business initially opened on Main Street in 2015 and later moved to North Broadway Avenue in 2018. At the time, it was a little bit out of downtown and quieter and off in the middle of nowhere, Anne said, but now it's absolutely bonkers here. Several new businesses have opened on North Broadway Avenue and throughout downtown Urbana in recent months, including Elm City Coffee. The Jacksonville-based business opened its Urbana location on West Main Street in December. H Mart, the popular Asian supermarket chain, opened a new location on North Broadway Avenue in January. Hotel Royer, the historic remodeled hotel, opened at South Ray Street in April and is part of the Tapestry Collection by Hilton. The Yard on Broadway, the new food hall opened earlier this month in the building at 401 North Broadway Avenue that was formerly home to Broadway Food Hall. It is home to new locations for several existing businesses, as well as two new establishments. Additionally, Black Dog Smoke and Ale House's Urbana location on North Broadway Avenue reopened in March after a five-year pause. Urbana's having a big year, said Sam Vandegrift, co-owner of new business Lazy Daisy Diner and Cafe. There's just a buzz in downtown Urbana, said Ben Manns, co-owner of Bunny's Tavern on West Water Street. It's something that I've never felt before. Manns, who has worked at Bunny's since 2006 and became an owner in 2009, said there are more people downtown than ever before, and consequently more customers at the bar. We generally do not book outdoor events or outdoor bands on the same weekend as a home football game, Mann said. But this year, because of the hotel, we've actually gone ahead and booked an outdoor event on homecoming weekend, just because of the amount of people that will be in the hotel and in the vicinity. He also expects the return of students in the fall to add to the activity he had already seen downtown. Lincoln Square property manager Hannah Smith is likewise excited about Hotel Royer, as well as two new tenants that have signed on at the mall, Lazy Daisy and a new vintage shop. We have a couple things in the works outside of those, but I won't spoil the fun, she told the News Gazette in an email. Vandegrift said Lazy Daisy is close to opening and is starting the final inspection and approval processes with both the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District and the city. Andrea Rudy, Urbana's senior advisor for integrated strategy development, said the city is thrilled that developers and business owners are investing in downtown. Rudy said the revenue from Urbana's hotel-motel tax and food and beverage tax has remained fairly consistent, and it's likely too early to tell how much of an impact new businesses are having. We're not seeing anything extraordinary in that regard, she said. According to Rudy, there are likely a number of external factors that have led to the new additions downtown. Businesses feel more comfortable working in a post-COVID environment and are starting to reinvest dollars and think about their growth plans, Rudy said. So I think that's probably a big part of it. She added that the city has made it a top priority to develop the downtown area. These efforts include incentives for new businesses, such as a $5.2 million reimbursement for Icon Hospitality, the developer of Hotel Royer. Additionally, the City Council voted in late February to approve incentive agreements for Fernie's High Horse, a new entertainment venue and restaurant space being developed on South Ray Street, and Parkadia, a fantasy mini golf tavern being developed by the Lukemans in the same building as CU Adventures in Time and Space. Parkadia's website describes the business as an immersive experience unlike anything else in the U.S., blending incredibly high-tech indoor miniature golf, interactive fantasy quests and mini games, magical private event spaces, innovative craft cocktails, and much more. Ann Lukeman said the hope is to open Parkadia yet this year, in fall or early winter. She added that it might be a partial opening, with the bar going first and more attractions following after. A couple said they're seeing a lot more people in their area of Broadway Avenue. Our normal kind of summer customers, combined with all of the new businesses that have opened, have meant that for the past month, basically, since the spring semester ended, we've just been busy every weekday, Chris Lukeman said. We're used to being busy on the weekend, but now the weekdays are absolutely crazy for us. When we have people who are coming in from out of town, it's so nice to be able to just point them across the street. Oh, if you like Asian food, there's a whole bunch of options in the H Mart food court. Or we've got some great local favorites across the street at The Yard, Ann Lukeman said. To date, four businesses are up and running in The Yard: Smith Burger Company, The Main Scoop, Public House 1833, and Watson's Shack and Rail. Also on the way, Columbia Street Roastery's new cafe, Fernando's Tacos, and the Regal Pig Social. Regal Pig Social should be opening in the next week or two, said Drew Smith, co-owner of The Yard. They're permitted. We're just waiting on the final wrap and stuff to get put up. Columbia Street, I think, is still waiting for final health department approval, as well as Fernando's. But once those two are bulletproof, they'll be opened as soon as possible. Smith and his wife, Jessica, own Public House 1833 and the Regal Pig Social, in addition to Smith Burger Company and The Yard. He said the food hall has gotten a lot of good feedback, especially from families who are glad to have a place they can bring their kids. Other downtown business owners have also been very supportive so far, he said. Several have visited The Yard. That includes some merchants that might seem like Smith's competition, including Mann's, whose establishment is just down the road. Ben from Bunny's comes in often, Smith said. I used to work for him for many years, and we still visit a lot of the local eateries and stuff around here. And everybody has nothing but nice things to say. As far as I'm concerned, any business is good business. It brings people downtown. I think there's enough to go around for everybody, where everyone can succeed, Mann's said. His neighbors at Rose Bowl Tavern expressed a similar sentiment. We don't consider it competition, said Rose Bowl co-owner Charlie Harris. What's good for downtown Urbana and our community is good for everyone. A rising tide lifts all boats. Sarah Buckman, marketing manager at Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square, said that while H Mart may present some competition, the co-op's mission, first and foremost, is to make food more accessible for our neighbors. Having more culturally rich food sources is always a positive, she added. My hope is that as people start to find their favorite places in Urbana, that they will stop in the co-op and feel a deep connection with our local food mission. We are always looking to draw UIUC students to the co-op and I think H Mart will be one of many great introductory spaces for them to explore. H Mart is located in a building that was formerly home to a Save-A-Lot grocery store. As such spaces fill up, the city now has a new problem to ponder. We're in a situation where we don't have the vacant buildings downtown, Rudy said. We've got interest in being in downtown Urbana, but we don't have a lot of spaces that are available for the size that some of these businesses want. So we're working with a developer from Chicago and trying to identify some space in the University Avenue, the old Five Points area. Continuing inside the front page with Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. One of the stars of tonight's fireworks show at Arthur's Freedom Celebration, a 13-year-old American quarter horse named Philly, doesn't just show up and gallop. She puts in serious training so as not to freak out when it all heck breaks loose during the rural Patriots dash in front of a 75-foot-long, 500-foot wall of fire. It involves practicing while owner-trainer Marty Miller sets off some firecrackers, smoke bombs, sparklers, things like that to get her used to it. It's the 25th anniversary of Niagara Falls, the most spectacular 4th of July display in these parts. Today's shindig starts with a 2 p.m. parade in downtown Arthur and moves to Jurgens Park at 4 for an evening of entertainment, skydivers, and at 9:30, fireworks. That's when Philly goes to work with Miller on board, waving an American flag. It's her fourth time performing in Arthur, and it's considerable festive crowd. I show people the video and it's, wow, how can your horse handle that, said Miller, 46, who makes the 9-hour drive from Oklahoma each year to take part. Philly will chow down on grass and just chill at 7 p.m., saddle up at 9, sprint 500 feet during the waterfall, then celebrate with a bowl of grain and maybe a cookie afterward. It's a great feeling when you're done and everything goes right, Miller said. But the ride is not just about me showing off my horse. The ride is about our country. And in history, area history in 1925, another death due to premature celebration of the 4th of July occurred at the Burnham Hospital, where a 12-year-old boy of Fisher died of tetanus, which set in from powder burns. He was burned 10 days ago in Charleston, where he was attending a Christian Endeavor convention, when a .22-caliber blank cartridge pistol exploded, badly burning both hands. The wounds were treated by a physician and were not thought of again until Saturday morning, when the boy became violently ill. Physicians who examined him pronounced his condition due to tetanus, commonly known as lockjaw. In 1975, Jack Campbell, manager of the Illinois Power Company office in Champaign, issued a staff memo permitting female employees to smoke at their desks during regular working hours. Male workers had been allowed to do so since at least 1947. All personnel were directed to exercise discretion and common sense courtesy in the presence of customers, other employees, and visitors. In 2010, in yet another cost-cutting move, Champaign County's presiding judge recently gave the sheriff another tool to help keep the jail population down. Judge Tom DeFinis said that Sheriff Dan Walsh has the authority to release people arrested on city ordinance violation warrants without them posting bond. In international history, today's highlight: on June 28, 1914, in an act that sparked World War I, Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria and his wife Sophie were shot to death by Serb nationalist Gavrilo Princip. Continuing with the news from our communities, from the Vermilion County Court, ex-Danville man gets 8 years for a fatal DUI crash. This article is by Luke Taylor. A former Danville man has been sentenced to 8 years in prison for his role in a 2022 crash on the western edge of the city that left one person dead. DeAndre Smith, 35, pleaded guilty to aggravated driving under the influence resulting in death. He was also ordered to serve 2 years of parole after leaving prison. The charges stem from a crash on October 16, 2022, near U.S. 150 and Jones Lane. Illinois State Troopers, who responded to the scene, determined that Smith hit another vehicle. A passenger in that vehicle died from their injuries. Smith admitted to consuming alcohol, and testing revealed his blood alcohol content to be 0.161, more than double the limit of 0.08, at which a motorist is presumed intoxicated in Illinois. Aggravated DUI resulting in death is a Class II felony. Under truth in sentencing laws, Smith must serve 85% of his sentence. Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey offered her condolences to the family of the victim. An innocent life has been taken because someone chose to get behind the wheel while impaired. This was a preventable tragedy caused by a dangerous act, Lacey said. Driving under the influence is a crime with devastating consequences, and my office will continue to fight to protect every life on our roads. In another article from the Danville Area Community College, interim president Fletcher hired to position full-time. This is by Jennifer Bailey. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees on Thursday night approved the hiring of interim president Randy Fletcher as the eighth president of the college. That sounds good, Fletcher said, adding that he's glad to be here. He said he's committed to Vermilion County. Well, I'm just very excited, Fletcher said. I'm very pleased that the board has the confidence in me to really serve as the eighth president of this fabled institution and placing that mantle of responsibility with me to lead us to the future. He said DAC is too important to the community and this region and is a beacon for so many people who are looking for a better life, a step up. And we provide all of that, he said, about skills and curriculum. He said DAC may be small with less than 4,000 students, but the faculty is creative and willing to learn more about their discipline and programs to meet the students where they are at. That's how education has changed. As president, he said, he has a vision for the institution that will take time. He's invested and wants to see the fruition of a 5-year strategic plan. Fletcher also said they have to put strategy around enrollment management and understand the pipelines of new students and serve existing students and move them to full-time enrollment. DAC's average enrollment each semester is less than 9 credit hours per student. They should have students aspiring to 12 credit hours, he said, to move through programs at a steady pace, move into work or transfer. Fletcher has served as interim president since December of 2024. His contract is still under negotiation, according to board chairman Greg Wolf, who said he expects to call a special meeting of the board to approve it soon. A committee of about a dozen DAC staff, foundation, and board members interviewed Fletcher and two other final candidates. Wolf said DAC officials will release the names of the other candidates and committee members at a later date. DAC professor Kathy Hunter, part of the interview committee, voiced her opinions to the board prior to its unanimous vote to hire Fletcher. Hunter said all three were great candidates, but it became apparent Fletcher was the top candidate. There was absolutely no doubt in our minds, my mind, she said. The experience that he's had, the expertise that he brings, his background in higher education, Hunter said, also talking about Fletcher's community college career and technical education experience. His background is everything I feel like we need here at DAC, she said. Fletcher answered every question of the interview committee extremely professionally and optimistically, and his qualifications on paper matched that, she continued. She said, being part of the union executive team, she's seen Fletcher be fair and professional. They've learned more about academics on the administrative side than they knew before. He's pro-faculty and pro-student, she said. And continuing with Kathy Reiser's mailbag, we have a question of, with Health Alliance ceasing Medicare Advantage coverage at the end of December, when will I be able to see what my options will be for next year's Medicare Advantage coverage? In May, the News Gazette's Jana Wersima wrote that about 33,000 current Medicare Advantage plan members will be affected by the elimination of all Health Alliance insurance products by the end of calendar year 2025. According to the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services website at cms.gov, Medicare's annual enrollment period runs from October 15th through December 7th every year. The website says information for next year's plans will be available beginning in October. It also says people can find Medicare plan information or compare options by calling 1-800-MEDICARE or visiting medicare.gov. But because October is still a few months off, there may not be much specific info on the 2026 plan options just yet. Meantime, we reached out to a few local insurance brokerages to see if they had any advice for Medicare-eligible individuals who may have routinely elected Health Alliance's Medicare Advantage plans in recent years. Even though the start of the annual enrollment period, or AEP, for Medicare is still a few months away, Michelle Serena, a sales executive with Snyder Diamond Brothers Insurance, said Health Alliance Medicare Advantage plan members can do a few things now to ensure they make their best decision during annual enrollment. First, when you receive your letter of notification of termination of plan, hold on to it as you may need to provide this in the future. Second, organize your own personal information when it comes to your doctor's and prescription drug needs. When you meet with your agent, you'll want to bring a copy of the letter and the outline of your doctor and prescription overview. These will all be key components in finding the best solution for your personal needs, Serena said. Clay Dean, CEO of First Mid Insurance, told us consumers can and should start looking at alternatives because Carl is essentially abandoning these products and they aren't shifting these customers to another payer, insurance carrier. So there's more flexibility and customers can and should start exploring their options as soon as possible. The AEP will be a crazy time for them to shop, especially if they're existing Carl customers. So the sooner they start looking, the better, and we are here to offer them advice on what is best for them and to help them understand all their options. While many Health Alliance Medicare Advantage customers may have put their annual insurance decision on autopilot, sticking with the same plan for years because they were happy with the provider choices it offered, Serena said, that doesn't necessarily mean a Medicare Advantage plan will be the best choice for them going forward. A Medicare supplemental plan with guaranteed issue may be worth considering. Guaranteed issue means there are no medical underwriting questions and you cannot be declined coverage or rated up due to medical history. For Medicare supplement plans, you will pay a premium based on your age. A positive consideration with a Medicare supplemental plan is you are able to see any provider who accepts Medicare. There are no networks. Serena says it's important for those who are navigating this kind of decision to connect with an insurance agent who can help them. She recommends finding an agent soon, as this will help ensure you are part of any educational meetings, seminars, or newsletters they may provide to equip you for the open enrollment AEP period. Understanding your options and starting early is going to be a key component in a smooth transition for anyone with a current Health Alliance plan. Tressica Foreman, Loman Ray Insurance's health director, agreed that Health Alliance Medicare Advantage members who do not already work with a broker or agent may wish to find one to help them navigate this transition to a new carrier. As we discuss our approach with our existing and new clients, our priority is to transition members to a plan that feels most similar to the experience they are used to with their current Health Alliance plan. Once the 2026 plan information is released, we will research all plan options to make sure their preferred providers remain in network with their new carrier plan selection, Foreman said. The next question is, which local governments have enacted a 1% local tax on groceries to replace the one that the state is dropping at the end of the year? In August, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the state imposed 1% grocery tax would be repealed as of January 1, 2026. The money raised through that tax is distributed to Illinois municipalities. If they choose to do so, cities, towns, and villages had the option of passing their own grocery tax ordinance that would offset the loss of the state tax dollars. According to an Illinois Department of Revenue list released on June 25th, area communities that had enacted their own grocery tax include Arcola, Cerro Gordo, Cisna Park, Clinton, Danville, Farmer City, Fisher, Georgetown, Leroy, Mahomet, Ogden, Roberts, Thomasboro, Tilton, and Villa Grove. The new local taxes will be implemented on January 1 as the state tax expires. At its Wednesday evening meeting, the Urbana City Council became the latest area municipality to pass a 1% grocery tax ordinance. When the elimination of the state tax was announced, the Illinois Municipal League released a document showing the city of Champaign, with a population of 88,000, stood to lose $2,703,000 in annual revenue after its repeal. Urbana faced a loss of about $1 million. That's all we have time for right now. We'll return with the second half hour. Please stay tuned.